welcome back to the I'm Moving to Italy podcast. This is Nathan Heinrich, and I would like to welcome you back to Season 4, Episode 9. In last week's episode, we had part one of our really wonderful and inspiring interview with Danny McCubbin from The Good Kitchen. After 17 years of working with wonderful celebrity chef Jamie Oliver, Danny McCubbin has ventured off on a brand new adventure of his own, and he has started a community kitchen in the Sicilian village of Mossamelli. So without saying much more, I want to get right back into this episode for the final part, part two of my interview with Danny McCubbin from The Good Kitchen. Enjoy.
In my heart, I've always wanted land, and it's quite difficult around Mossamelli to find somewhere to live with land or a campagna. And so the ocean called me. There's this beautiful part of Sicily called Torre Salsa, 6 kilometers of a nature reserve. And I fell in love with Torre Salsa because it's so much like Australia. So I decided to sell my house in London. And then my dream is always to be, has been to have a place by the sea. So I spend Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday here, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday in the kitchen. So this gives me the chance to recharge, to reflect. And, you know, the kitchen is getting quite busy and it's getting a lot of attention. And I always said to myself, having worked in London for 23 years, having had that health scare, that whatever I did, I would never be stressed. And I would never get to the point where I regret going in. And I absolutely love that kitchen. I love The Good Kitchen. I love everything it represents. But however, I know it was important for me to have that distance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have your dream piece of property with an ocean view and an olive grove, and a house that gives you a little bit of a reprieve from Mossamelli. Now, how far is, you said it's Torre Salsa?
Torre Salsa. It's an hour, and it's so funny. My friends in Mossamelli are like, you're driving back, up and back every week. As an Aussie, that's nothing. That's like a walk in the park. I mean, it's probably the same for you and your life in the States. Like, you just drive. I mean, it's no problem. My mum came and stayed and she said, oh, Dal, it's a bit far, isn't it? And I was like, mum, it's from Brisbane to the Gold Coast. She goes, okay. So yeah. It's not far from me. You know, and I just get here and totally relax. I've got some plans maybe to eventually have this as a foodie destination. So people come and learn how to harvest the olives, marinate olives, maybe, you know, like farm stay here. And I'm, you know, whatever I do, Nathan, I'm always looking out for not in a selfish way, but how I can set it up that I'm taken care of financially, you know, stimulated, driven, that then I can give 100% to the kitchen and volunteer. So I have some lovely plans for this place. And I think, I've started sharing it with lots of friends from Australia and the UK, and it's a special, special part of the world. When I first opened the kitchen end of July last year, so we just turned one, I thought that I would be cooking meals for all of the people that go to the church. So I went to the church leaders and they said, we don't need any more food, which is good, right? So they're, you know, I think the Catholic Church stepped up during the pandemic and, you know, Sicilians are very proud. So there are food banks and food vouchers available at the municipality, but they won't go there if they're struggling because everyone knows each other that, you know, there's a certain amount of shame. So I was like, who am I going to cook for? Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, what I'll do, and everything I do, Nathan, I do it in the sense of knowing that it could change. Like, this isn't final. The kitchen has grown organically. It's grown as per the needs of the town. So what I started to do was every Friday, I would just invite anyone. The church would tell me some people that were struggling for a sit down meal. So I did one lunch and no one ever came back because it's on the town square. We opened up the glass doors. It was summer. They didn't feel comfortable. So I was like, okay, I now need to find people we can deliver food to, because obviously this isn't kind of going to work to be, and I never wanted it to be a soup kitchen, like that band-aid solution of like, just come here, get it, food and go. And so I then started working, just asking people, you know, do you know anyone that is alone on a Sunday or a Friday and wants a meal? Do you know any families that would want a fresh bag of produce, whatever? And slowly I started cooking 20 meals a week. And I didn't care that that wasn't a big number. I think a lot of, you know, the big charities get involved in raising money, and the bigger they get, they need more funds. And so they have to feed more people. It's like, for me, it's always quality, not quantity. And then the other thing I did was I changed the free lunch to a Sunday, and I opened the doors for anyone. You know, people would walk past or drop in. I'd be like, do you want to come for lunch on Sunday? I was like, okay. So people would walk past. The mayor came, a senator came from town from Rome. I had just, you know, people from the municipality, my friends who were visiting, the other foreigners there, and I just opened up. So you walk past this kitchen, it's like, it's not this place of shame. It's a beautiful space where people are sitting around a table. It's Italian. That's what you do on a Sunday. You know, you sit around a table. And then the other second thing that I did to change the perception of what the kitchen, the good kitchen is I did cooking classes for kids. So that was a real turning point, because people then would walk past and nonnas would sit and watch as the kids would make pasta. And then I met this amazing nonna by the name of Clodgera, and she started doing like cake decorating biscuit classes for the kids. And then I linked up with a local project called Casa Vanessa, it was kids whose parents have abandoned them. So we had them, and, you know, Halloween arrived. So we did a Halloween party and Easter. It's like, everything that I did, I involved everyone in the town. And then slowly people were like, oh, we get it. Like, you know, it's not a handout place. Like, and then the biggest turning point ever for me. So January, what year are we? 2022. This year, sorry. January this year was the second wave of COVID in Musumeli. And I think overnight, I think 500 people had to isolate. And so everyone follows me on Facebook in Musumeli, the people of the town. So I just put a note out and said, a post and said, look, we have food from the supermarkets. I've got the space. I cook. If anyone is isolating and needs a cooked meal, I can shop for people. And so I had 11 families, and I'll never forget it. There was one young girl. I think she's like 17. She said, I don't know, I've never had to do this before, but my parents are struggling. They both have been laid off their jobs because they're going to have to isolate for however many days. We have no food. And I was just like, I'm getting a bit emotional with this, but I remember receiving that message from her. And then for a month, every day I delivered a cooked meal to that family. So the look on their faces, and she ended up writing, telling me that when they ended up getting financially secure again, she wrote me this most beautiful card. You can see it on my Instagram, where I just thought, you know, if I was to be knocked over by a bus, which would be ironic because there's not many buses in Musumeli, but if it was time to leave the planet, my work here is done, because that was just, for me, just so incredibly moving. But what happened, Nathan, was those 11 families that I looked after, they then got it and understood that there's no shame in asking for a meal. There's no shame in asking for help. So they then started recommending and saying, hey, Giuseppe down the road, I don't think he's eating well. He's not well. Do you think you can supply a meal? I said, absolutely. So then over winter, I was delivering 100 meals a week. We had extraordinary young lads who was caught doing something not so good in the town and was supposed to do community service, sweeping the streets, saw me on telly and asked his mum maybe he could come and do his community service with me, which he did. Extraordinary young lad whose food skills were just incredible. He was 19 at the time. I think he's 20 now. But all of his mates would come. I gave him a key to the kitchen. On a Friday night, they would take over the space and cook for each other. So the good kitchen in the town square suddenly became this beautiful food hub, which was about inclusion. Yes, we looked after people that are struggling, but it's more about creating this kind of community center, this hub, this place to go. And then as you see on my Instagram, I think that the heart and soul of it is the young lads that came to the cooking class, who then, whose parents then came to me and said, look, the boys loved it. Can they help you on a Sunday? So I now have a core group of 6 or 7 young lads between 10 and 14 who come, and they are just extraordinary, and they don't stop working. Some of them want to be chefs. Some of them don't want to be chefs. I don't care. They don't have to be chefs, but they've just got something to do. They've got purpose. I mean, I love that town, but it struggled economically for so long that there's nothing for the kids to do. There's no park, really. There's one park, which is overcrowded. And so that's been a real turning point as well. And then 3 months ago, we moved next door to a space which is twice the size. So now my routine is Thursday, I go to Caltanissetta, to the big wholesale market, and I collect a carload of food that's free. I deliver half of that to the brothers from the San Franciscan church across the way. They then distribute that to refugees and immigrants in Caltanissetta. And then Thursday afternoon, I do a meal service. Friday is kind of like a reset day, people calling in. Saturday, we ended up, and now we do music workshops, because another big turning point was in the kitchen was when the Ukrainian families arrived fleeing the war. We look after them. And then Sunday is the day where we do the main meal delivery.
Incredible. So moving, that story, specifically about the young girl who reached out to you on behalf of her family. I mean, if you needed any confirmation that you were in the right place at the right time, doing something that only you could do, that was it, huh? Yeah.
It's not often that I just do what I do, and I don't often reflect on what I've achieved. But when she brought that card to me, I just cried for a long time, and I'll cherish that card for the rest of my life. It's just so beautiful. And for me too, like, she helped turn the good kitchen around, you know, because her family then identified 3 other families that really did need help. And it's an extraordinary town. I mean, we're now doing around 40 or 50 meals a week. So in summer, as soon as summer hit, some of the families I was looking after in winter, who couldn't afford to pay their energy bills, I started delivering food to them so they could pay their energy bills. As soon as summer hit, when they had food from their campanias and, you know, much more food available, they said, look, we don't need the food anymore. Thank you so much. It really should go to somebody else who needs it. Like, how amazing that they come to me to say it can be for somebody else. It's incredible.
Yeah, because you, thanks to the efforts that you're that the kitchen and you are doing, you've bridged that gap, and now they're in a good place again. So now resources can go elsewhere.
You know, like, what's an Aussie doing in this remote town? And they were curious about the kitchen and the whole notion that I had crowdfunded. So that's a strange concept to them. Like, that people would have given £25,000 to start this project in a town that they've never been to. And they were curious as to why I was doing it, you know. And it was interesting, the other day I had a visitor, Italian, and she said, are you Christian? Do you have a faith? And I was like, I do have a faith. It's not based on any structure or recognized religion, but I know that I'm more than just flesh and blood with what's happened in my life. I've asked for help and I've received help in incredible ways. But I was a bit offended because I was like, you don't have to be a Christian or born again to do what I'm doing. And that, I think I didn't get it. I caught myself being a little bit annoyed that she thought the only reason why I was, and it actually, it why I was a little bit annoyed is that 3 other people in the town had asked as well. So, you know, I think what I'm doing is changing the notion of what good looks like, you know. And I think I've got to be careful too, because the lads that you see on my Instagram, who are just extraordinary, they all are going to church to do their catechism, and they're doing their first baptism. And I say to them sometimes, and they're reluctant to leave the kitchen, you know, like, we're cooking. And I said, in my broken Italian, I say, do you want to go? They're like, no, no. And I've got to be really careful because I'm like, and I say, well, you know that what happens in church, this kitchen is like a church. We learn not to judge. We're doing good. And, you know, my boys go and deliver all the food. And I'm sorry I'm saying boys because at the moment we don't have any girls volunteering. I am working on that. But sure. At the moment it's just boys. So my boys go and deliver the food to families and people that are far worse off than anything they've ever seen. So they learn the true sense of giving, and then they learn that, you know, that not to worry too much about what they have. But I've got to be careful because I don't want it to be seen like, oh, that's that Aussie guy is turning people away from the church, which is not what I'm doing. What I'm doing is teaching them that you don't, you know, goodness doesn't happen when you walk into the structure that has a cross over it. Sure. Yeah, my boys are incredible. We did a fundraiser called Cook for Ukraine just when the war broke out. Some of my amazing food contacts in London did this online campaign, raised a lot of money. And so I turned the kitchen into a farmer's market, and people of the town arrived with cakes and biscuits and biscotti and tarts and homemade jams. It's like beautiful. And I had these old wooden crates, and I set up the kitchen like a farmer's market. We raised 600 euros for UNICEF. And so the week later, one of my friends wanted to give some pocket money to the boys. I think it must have been coming up to Easter. I can't remember the exact dates. It's 5 euros each. And I was out delivering, and the boys said, no, we don't want this money. We want to put it in the tin for the Ukrainian families. And I was like, how extraordinary that a 10-year-old, and like 5 euros is a lot of money for somebody in Muslimali his age. And I just was like, it's another one of those moments where it's like, you know what? I don't have 50 kids that I'm teaching. There's not 50 kids that volunteer, but there are three who I know that I've contributed to. And they continually teach me, like, they have so little, and they're so happy. It's beautiful. I need to learn more Italian. That's the only thing that I struggle with, is that it's all Sicilian dialect in Muslimali, and so by osmosis I'm not picking up on any Italian, hardly any Italian. And I need, it's the only thing that, if you ask me what the challenge is, that's the only thing that's challenging, and it's totally my doing, because I become so mentally exhausted at night after I'm in the kitchen, the last thing I'm going to do is study. However, I know I have to change, because I need to get it to a deeper level with the lads, and I need to get to a deeper level with my friends, Italian friends in Italy. There are elderly people who don't speak Italian. They only speak the Sicilian dialect. Mm. And so even there, when they speak Italian, it doesn't sound like my friends from Toscana or Milan or what, you know. I go to my friends arrive and they start speaking Italian. I'm like, wow, I know what you're saying. So, and my kids, the boys, I'm like, oh, por favore, prego, por favore, solo italiano. No, io non capisco Siciliano. Like, sì. 1 minute later, they're speaking Sicilian again. And it's nothing like Italian. I don't know if you've ever heard a really strong Sicilian dialect. It's nothing.
I have some friends from New York who their families came from Sicily, and they speak the dialect, and it's such a rougher, choppier sound.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. There's none of the musical flow.
Yes.
It's very choppy sounding. Yeah. You're trying to learn the dialect and Italian.
Yeah. No, sorry, Nathan. I completely ignore the dialect. I don't even go there. that would be, you know, I know my limits. That would be too difficult. I am at a point where I need more, just for my, again, to, you know, take care of myself, because it's exhausting. And also I want deeper conversations with everyone that comes to the kitchen.
Yeah. I would imagine that there's probably very few English speaking people in a town that's remote like that.
Well, you'd be surprised, because Muslimali in the 50s, a family moved to Watford or Woking in the UK, and then other families followed. So there's this very big Muslimalese community in Woking, Watford, Surrey area. like thousands and thousands of people from Musumeli. Wow. But it's either families that have moved there and had their kids there and they stayed, but then there's a whole group that came back to Musumeli who speak English. And so they want to speak English to me all the time too. So that's the struggle. Mm. So it's totally my, it's like anything, the more you put in, the more you get out. And I'm not a good classroom. I don't learn in the classroom. I have to learn by doing. But having said that, you know, I've moved there. I knew one person. I've started this project. I survive every time I'm there. I'm not willing, you know, I'm willing to make mistakes. I'm willing to make a fool of myself if the Italian's completely wrong. I'll get there.
Well, Danny, I am just blown away. I love that you are adapting what you do to the people rather than trying to get them to fit into your mold.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Nathan, for me, that is always at the core is I question and ask, like, does the town need this? You know, what can benefit the town? I mean, the Ukrainian families has been another extraordinary chapter. There was five families that arrived. My wonderful friend Vera, who you'll see on my Instagram, she was in Musumeli when she was 10 or 11 to detox from Chernobyl. So she knew the town, had friends there. So when the war broke out, she fled with her mum and three girls. I never would have pictured that the kitchen would become a beautiful hub for them as well. So Vera's mum and my other friend Alessa's mum, Ala, come and cook. We share a meal together every week. We do music workshops when the kids come and play. So, you know, this space, food is at the heart of everything in that kitchen, but there's so much more to it as well. And I'm just always open to, you know, I get asked to collaborate and do projects where I say, is this good for the good kitchen? Is it good for people of the town? And if it's not, I say no. That's really important as well. And also, I don't want it to get too big. I want it to stay true to the essence of what it is. Mm-hmm. That's why it's important for me that I have them my 3 days away. And then I also want it to be, you know, my ultimate goal is that I raise money and it becomes a social enterprise where people of the town are employed. So we could do, you know, team building lunches and supper clubs. And, you know, I'm even thinking of the olive oil that I produce here. Maybe we could sell that. And, you know, that's my goal. I'm conscious that at the moment I run everything. And I don't want to be doing that in the year's time. I want to work hard, work my way out of a job so that then I can hand it to the people of town. I'll always be there and I'll always be on hand, but it's not sustainable to have one person who runs absolutely everything. So I'm slowly taking a few baby steps. I need to go to London for, not to get too personal, but I need to get a hernia operation. Mm-hmm. Which has been bugging me. So I'll be away for 3 weeks. I'm going to get some volunteers to come and run the kitchen on a Sunday. We won't do as many services, sort of events during those 3 weeks, but that's my way of handing over slowly. Life tends to just kind of force me to do those things sometimes. Like I've been thinking about this hernia operation for a while, and then I swam too far here in Torres Sosa. Oh, there it goes.
Well, certainly wish you good luck on that. And I'm sure you're going to have a complete and full recovery. And I know that everyone's going to be happy when you come back all patched up and ready to get back to it.
Yes. Well, sorry to end on a
no, we're not.
I know that earlier, but I think it really, you know, it does, you know, backtrack to my point of taking care of myself. And in taking care of myself, you know, looking at it as a positive. So I'm quite excited about the volunteers coming on board and running the kitchen. Like that's a good step. Like life has forced me to do that. You know, I could easily go on for another 3 or 4 months and think, okay, I need to start handing the reins over. Mm. But it's interesting that I would reframe it in that I'm certainly not looking forward to being operated on, but looking forward to letting go of the reins a bit.
No, you got to take care of yourself to make sure that you're able to continue what you're doing. So I think it's best of luck with that. And I'm sure you're going to come back stronger and raring to go.
Yeah, for sure. Always.
Danny, I feel like I could talk to you for hours. We set aside an hour for our interview. I wasn't even sure if we were going to fill that full hour. And I see that we've gone past an hour and a half here. So we might have to split this interview up into two parts,
yeah,
which would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your generosity and taking the time, because that's your most valuable resource. This incredible story of yours. I mean, there's so many different chapters to your story that have already happened. But what I find so fascinating is that in your mid-50s here, you're writing a whole new book of your life. It's like, I'm not even sure if this part of your life fits into the first many chapters that you shared with us.
I don't know. It's an interesting question, an interesting way to end the podcast. For me, it's just been this, you know, at times it was tangential what I did, but everything has led me to this remote city town in the middle of Sicily, where I am continually being taught the values of life and how there are good people and that this world is a humane place. I never, ever, ever would have thought that I would have ended up living in that town ever. And every day I'm grateful that the path led me there.
Well, it's a beautiful story. I really want everyone to follow you on Instagram. And real quickly, what is your name on Instagram so that our listeners can follow you?
It's Danny for Good.
Danny for Good on Instagram. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So now the one final question I have for you before we say goodbye is, how can anyone who is listening, who is so inspired by what you're doing, how can they help to support what you're doing?
Oh, amazing. So I'm in the process as well of getting a website together. So I have a blog, Good for Good. I haven't posted for a while, but the Good Kitchen needs its standalone websites. Mm-hmm. On there will obviously be, I think, a donation platform. However, I think for me, what's most important, that will be where we will launch this opportunity for people to come and learn about the Good Kitchen. So this whole idea of a community cooking course. And I think that's when I'll be calling on people for help and advice, and if they know of other projects. So my idea is that, you know, we run a week to 2 week long residential course in Muslim Ali, where they come immersed in the kitchen, but they're chosen to come by having an idea. So they might be in Nebraska or in London or in Adelaide or whatever. They either have a change of life, they have a space where they want to start a community kitchen. So they come to me with an idea, and then they present that idea. And over a period of a week, 2 weeks, they immerse themselves in everything in the kitchen. How we cook, the recipes, upscaling, how we rescue the food. And then at the end of the 2 weeks, they sort of present back their blueprint of, this is how I'm going to do it. And then on that website, they have a profile. So I kind of connect everyone. Just really look in your own backyard. That's all. I mean, is there someone in the street you can cook for? Is there a community-based project? How's your neighbor doing? You know, I think the pandemic, we were all in general good at kind of looking after each other. You know, I think maybe we're losing that a little bit again. So just reset, look after each other, and do good.
Oh, do good. Great spot to end, and a great message. Well, yeah. I would say it sounds like what people need to do is be following you and following what you're doing. So follow you on social media on Danny for Good at Instagram.
Yeah. And I'm realizing, Nathan, you're brilliant at doing this. I think, you know, just to make sure you're creating your own community as well. So my blog, I don't get as much time as I probably should to update that, but that's easier to connect with me then as well, because I think with social media I try to digitally detox every now and then, and not spend so much time on there. At the moment, you know, Danny for Good, the my Instagram is almost like my website. So yeah, but follow and reach out, and if I can help any way, then I'd love to.
I think maybe the most important piece of wisdom you've shared today is, how important it is to have a sense of purpose and to know that when you're going to a new community, think about what you can bring to that community of value and look for the needs and try to meet some of those needs rather than just being there for, you know, your own personal reasons. See what, in what ways you can improve the lives of the community that you're moving into.
For sure. Nathan, I want to acknowledge you as well. You've done the same, you know, from your life in the US and moving countries, and everything you've done is admirable as well. And what you're doing to inspire others too. So I'm so glad that we connected. I knew we would chat for a long time, and it definitely won't be the last chat between us.
Oh, I'm very much looking forward to it, whether it's in the peninsula of Italy or whether when I come, I haven't been to Sicily yet.
Okay.
When I visit Sicily, I will certainly not miss visiting you when I'm there.
You're always welcome.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate you taking the time to be here.
My pleasure. Take care.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.
Ciao.
I don't know about you, but I'm so inspired by Danny, and it makes me want to sort of follow in his footsteps a bit and bring value to whatever place I find myself permanently in Italy. I want to bring value. I want to bring good. I want to make a difference in my community. I don't want to just come in and say, oh, I'm here to absorb like a sponge all of the wonderful things Italy has to offer. I want to be able to give back to my community and to be able to be a really, really important part of it. And I'm just blown away by Danny. So I'll certainly be keeping you updated about what he's up to. And if there are ways for us to help him and to support what he's doing and his work, I will certainly be keeping you up to date about that. So if you go to my website, imovingtoitaly.com, and you go to the interview page, you'll be able to find all the links to Danny's Instagram and everything that he's doing. So be sure to check out imovingtoitaly.com and check for the interview page for the links to all of Danny's incredible work that he's doing. Well, that brings us to our next segment, which is, of course, our weekly segment with Vera. La Vera Italia is one of my favorite segments of our show. I am absolutely loving the fact that I get to spend not only time each week doing my language coaching with Vera, but I also get to spend time with her and I. We have so much fun. We laugh. Sometimes we find that we're talking for 2 hours and we're like, oh, wow, maybe we should get some work done. Vera has just become a very dear friend and someone that I am incredibly grateful for. And I have a feeling that she probably feels like your friend as well. And I know many of you have reached out to her and are using her for your language coaching to learn Italian. Bravo to you, because she is the best. And make sure you're following her on Instagram at Kike Language. And don't forget to visit kikelanguage.com for all of her incredible coaching services. All right, well, here is our weekly segment, La Vera Italia. Hello, Vera. Welcome back to another segment of La Vera Italia.
Ciao, ciao a tutti. So glad to be here with you.
It's so good to be back here with you. And you and I just finished a really great coaching session where I didn't do great, but thanks to you, I've revisited the verb volere. And so we were working on that, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. Actually, it's a verb you knew very well already. It's just that sometimes, and that's a problem when you try and speak a foreign language, you think in English and try to translate that. But maybe in English, you don't use the verb to want as much as we use the verb volere. And then you say the sentences that make no sense to us. So the point is, only speak Italian and try to use Italian and not translate from English, right?
Yep, that's right. And when you have the time, I know you're very busy these days, but when you have the time to watch it, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on this new show, From Scratch, which is a limited series on Netflix. So I know you haven't watched it yet, but when you do, I'm going to be really curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Because you said there's some Italian in there.
There's not just some Italian. There's Italian throughout. Every single episode has lots of Italian. It's kind of actually surprising.
So you should all watch that show because that's helpful because you all want to move to Italy. So starting hearing some Italian is good for you, even if you don't understand a single word.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, in a future episode, after you've had some time to watch that show, I'll be curious to have your feedback on that. Because I think a lot of our listeners are going to be, if they haven't already watched the show, they will be watching it. And so I want to know your perspective as an Italian expert on what was the quality of Italian that is being spoken on that show?
Oh, now I can't wait to take a few days off and just binge watch the whole series.
Exactly.
So you watched the whole series. You said that, right? You just binge watch all of the episodes. So your Italian skills are just wow right now. And I can proceed with my Italian question.
We can proceed, but I don't know about the Italian skills being perfect right now, but we'll see. Let's see what you've got for me today.
Okay. Adesso sei negli Stati Uniti. Dopo 2 anni in Italia, trovi diversa la vita negli Stati Uniti?
I think I got it. Let's hear it one more time, a little slower.
Oh, that was the slow version, but okay.
Oh, great. I thought it was kind of slow. All right. So why don't you give me the fast version then?
No. I'll repeat it slow and then maybe fast a third time.
Okay.
Adesso sei negli Stati Uniti. Dopo 2 anni in Italia, trovi diversa la vita negli Stati Uniti? Fast. Adesso sei negli Stati Uniti. Dopo 2 anni in Italia, trovi diversa la vita negli Stati Uniti?
Mm-hmm. Okay. You said, I believe you said, after 2 years in Italy, what is different about life in the United States?
Yeah, that's what I asked, correct. So general sense of it. If you really want to get into the words I said, adesso, so right now, adesso, you're in the States, sei negli Stati Uniti. Dopo, after, 2 anni in Italia, 2 years in Italy, trovi, so do you find, diversa, that's different, trovi diversa la vita, and you all know the word vita, right, like dolce vita. Mm-hmm. Negli Stati Uniti. So do you find life in the States different?
Okay, that's a great question. And yes, I am currently in the United States for a quick visit to see some family. And then I'll be back in a few weeks. I'll be back in Italy. But yes, the answer is sì, assolutamente.
Okay, assolutamente. It's the lazy answer, but you just had your 1 hour coaching session. So you're tired right now. Your brain is like, give me a break. So we will wait for you to tell what you find different, like your reverse culture shock in another episode, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to be talking about that. I'm actually on my way to California with a quick stop in Tennessee and then on my way to California to spend some time with family. So while I'm in California, I will be sharing different experiences that I've had here and some of the differences. And you're absolutely right. It is reverse culture shock. You and I have talked about it a little bit, but I haven't really shared it yet with the listeners. So it's a great question. And I am looking forward to sharing a detailed answer in English and maybe even in Italian in a future episode.
But you know what? This Italian question thing before we start with our segment, mm-hmm. Oh, this was a big hit. Some of my students that are, first of all, your listeners want to do that too. So we start every session with a question. So just surprise question. So thank you, Nathan, for the idea.
Well, it's working out really well. And what I'm loving is that even though I'm not quite yet able to answer in the way I would like to, because that's kind of the last hurdle that I need to get over in learning Italian, but I'm finding it Maybe you're just choosing easy questions. You might be being really nice and only choosing easy questions, but I'm finding your questions to be quite easy to understand, in fact.
Yeah, because you're learning Italian. You haven't realized that yet, but you do speak Italian.
Yeah, I don't think I've quite acknowledged it to myself. I think I'm somehow there's a certain part of me that maybe it's imposter syndrome. Maybe it's I just can't hardly believe that it's real. I don't know what it is, but it's like I won't even allow myself. I can't acknowledge to myself that I'm getting to a place of almost fluency, but I'm just not there yet. I'm not comfortable with it yet. Maybe in another year, I'll be more comfortable.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for everything that you're doing to help me with the process, because honestly, I think that my Italian has improved dramatically since our time together. So yeah, a lot of the credit goes to you, Vera.
Okay. I will say, well, of course, no, thank you. And it's all to you. But I say that after your first episode in Italian only.
Oh, geez. Okay, well, that's something to aspire to. So we'll think about that. I don't know if my listeners are up for that. One whole episode of my poor Italian, but it's not a bad idea, actually. All right, well, I'm excited to hear what you have to share with us today. We have never claimed that we were going to try to sell anybody on Italy. What we are trying to do here is we're trying to share with you the realities of what life in Italy is. So we're going to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. So what are you sharing with us today, Vera?
Well, something like along the lines of what to expect when moving to Italy, the not so bright side of it, mm-hmm. because you all love Italy, of course, otherwise you wouldn't even be listening to this podcast. And you're dreaming maybe of moving here, moving to Italy, to La Bella Italia. And I know Italy is beautiful. And there are hundreds of reasons why you should move here. So I don't want to discourage you at all, but I want you to be prepared because your dreams will crash into reality. They will. I mean, it will happen, and there's nothing you can do about it because, you see, I'm Italian, you, Nathan, are Americans, your listeners are from all over the world, I think, and every single one of us just has in their veins, that runs through their veins, their culture, their, you know, what they're always used to. And it's not just the big ideas, like, I don't know, language, religion, philosophy, or whatever. It's the smallest thing, right? So we mentioned a few before, like how long does it take to buy a car? So it's just things that we give for granted. And we think they're the same all over the world, but they're not. So that's when your dreams will crash into reality. And Italy is an amazing nation, but we struggle in a lot of things. And I think you're in for quite a ride when you move to Italy, and it's probably better for you. So I'm doing it for you. If you don't get here with rose-colored glasses and like, oh, I'm moving to Italy, I'm having spritz, I'm living La Dolce Vita, because you're not, especially in the first few months of the process when you are trying to understand. And, well, the first thing, and we mentioned this last time during our last episode, but I want to get into that a little bit more, is that you will be not really conned, but overcharged for things, you know, or you will pay a little bit more, a little bit differently, or you will be not helped as fast as Italians would be. And that's sort of a problem. Like, you'll be talked, for example, not really that they don't want to help you, but maybe you'll be talked into buying the most expensive paint for your windows shutters. You know, the Italian windows shutter, persiane, they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And in your country, you probably don't have those, right? You use different things. And so you have no idea. And they will say, oh, no, but in Italy, we do this, we do that. And they send you a 200 euros paint when a 20 euros paint would be just fine. You're getting the best product out there, of course, but you don't need it. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm going here? Mm-hmm. So that's sort of one of the things you will face. You won't probably realize it at the moment. You will realize it later. So maybe if you get prepared and maybe do some research on your own, mm-hmm. You have to restore a house or even, have a bookshelf built by someone. Just do some research in English, of course, online, and get there with some idea with the products you would like. Don't just trust them, because maybe they give you the very best available on the market, but there's no point for you to have the very best on the market if you just have a, you know, normal house, normal car or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Got it. One thing I would like to ask you is, if you go into a really large, like, box store, I know where we live up near Venice, there are more and more of these big, you know, they would be considered like a Home Depot in the United mm-hmm. States. So it's a big, huge box store where everything that you need, from power tools to paint to blinds and shutters and concrete and tile and sinks, everything that you need for a home or a garden is there. And in a situation like that, you're probably less likely to be upsold or upcharged. You're kind of going there and finding what you need on your own anyway. And if you need help locating something or knowing how something works, what you're maybe referring to is working directly with an independent contractor or going to a little, like, maybe family shop, right?
Yeah, correct. That's what I meant. Smaller shops or contractors, or even asking people for suggestion. Just make sure you get prepared, you know, that you know what you want and you know what that is worth. It could be a little bit more or a little bit less than the country where you're from, but it should be on that price range and not crazy stuff, even if they tell you it's the best available.
Yeah, you're using a good example about, you just use paint, like a bucket of paint, for example. So if you know that a bucket of paint, you should anticipate spending around, I don't know, 20 to 40 euros for a normal can of paint, whatever size it is. Then if you're being charged hundreds of euros, then you know that something's a little off. So just educate yourself, is what you're saying, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And then another big reality check, we've mentioned this before a few weeks ago, it's that here in Italy, it takes a long time. I know we've been repeating this. I know that a lot of people keep saying that on social media and everywhere else, but it really does. And now I'm not getting into it again, but what I want you to understand, that it will happen to you. And the first time, and I know because I've been seeing these things happening to a lot of friends from abroad here, the first time they're like, oh, maybe it's my fault. Maybe I did something wrong because I'm the foreigner, so I don't know. Maybe I should have done this. I should have done that. And then the second time you'll be like, oh yeah, that was bad luck, but it was just, you know, a coincidence. It won't happen again. And then the third time you will find another excuse and then another one. No, it's not you. It's not bad luck. It's just the way it is. It is very complicated. I would need like 3-hour episodes, 10 seasons, maybe, to try to explain why in Italy we have so many problems on, you know, jobs, offices, bureaucracy. It's really, really complex. It's a complex issue, but just remember that's the way it is. Be prepared. So if you have an appointment, like a quick meeting, and that happened literally 2 days ago to some friends of mine, a quick meeting at 9, they've been told it will be over in 40 minutes, 1 hour top. Yeah, 6 hours later, still there.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, because something happened and then, you know, so be prepared. And also, and that's just a suggestion if you want to be more friendly with Italians, and that it's especially for people from the US where things work so fast, don't push us, not too much. I mean, a little bit, it's okay. Because then people will like, oh, okay, so they're really interesting. They really want this job done or whatever. But if we tell you it's going to be 3 weeks, there's no way it's going to be less than that. So if you push, then people can get mad and like, you know what? Let's make 7 weeks. So they stop pushing me, you know? So you have to find the right balance to politely, you have to find the right balance to politely ask if it's maybe possible to have the things done or delivered or whatever in within a time frame, but then don't push too much or you will have the opposite effect.
Okay, so that's good advice. I think that that's really good for some of us to hear because we do have expectations about how long things should take. And of course, we also have expectations about if we're being told that things can take a certain length of time, then we always, in our mind, always assume, okay, worst case scenario is maybe if you're telling me 3 weeks, maybe it would take four. But in the Italian's mind, they're thinking, I'm going to tell you 3 weeks, but we all know it's going to be six.
Yep. And I can tell you've been living in Italy for 2 years now. But that would happen.
Yeah, so it's going to be 6 weeks, but don't try to force somebody to get it done at the 3 week period that you discussed. Just automatically set your expectations for a realistic time, which would be 6 weeks. Now, as you're getting closer to the 6 weeks and you're not seeing the project progressing, that's maybe when you can apply a little bit of polite pressure. And by pressure, what would be, do you think, an appropriate way to express your desire to get a project completed without turning into one of those really, really annoying, irritating foreigners?
It's not only annoying, irritating foreigners, it's everyone, even annoying, irritating Italian. So I don't have an answer to that. And that's why I've always dreamt of buying a property and restoring it, but I'm not doing it because I don't know the way to push without being, you know, sort of mean at one point, because, you know, there's just this much that you can wait and then it's like crazy and I'm not good at those sort of things. But I would say just maybe if you're here when you're restoring your property, we're talking about that, or maybe you ordered a car, maybe even a rental. If you're coming here on holiday, I've seen it happening a lot of times, people getting to the airport and their car wasn't there. So maybe in that case, just a few days before, call again. Don't give for granted that since you booked online, everything went through smoothly, because probably didn't. So just double check and say, so I'm getting there this day. I sent you an email that day, the payment that day. So here's everything. Can we double check that? So it could be annoying, but it could save you. And so the same thing for works. If you're there, if you're here in Italy while they are restoring your property, just show up. Surprise visits. So if you don't find anyone there at that point, you can just say, okay, wait a second. I'm paying you people to work on my project. Why wasn't anyone there on a Tuesday at 11 a.m.?
Okay, so
finding the right balance.
Yeah. Okay, that's good advice. So confirm appointments, confirm orders, make sure maybe a little bit ahead of a trip or ahead of a delivery that everything's still on track. And especially if you get that in writing in an email, that's helpful. Let me give you a little scenario. Tell me what you think about this, because this is something I've used before in the United States when I've had projects, building projects or different things I've worked on in the United States, that I've found kind of helps a little bit, and it makes you a little bit less the bad guy, the person pushing, and it sort of creates an event that you're trying to prepare for rather than your own personal desire to have the project done. So how do you think it would work for an Italian if you say, okay, well, you say that this project will only take 3 weeks. And I know that that would be great if we can get it done in 3 weeks. But what I really need to have this project completed for is I'm going to be hosting an event at my house on this date, or there's going to be an event at the property on this date. There's going to be a wedding. There's going to be a party. There's going to be something. and you can make up whatever you want. And, you know, you can still have an event there. You don't have to tell them how big the event is. An event could be having two couples over for dinner or something. But to have like an event where you're having people come in, visitors come, and you say, okay, as long as it's done by, you know, the 5 weeks from now, that gives us a little extra period. It has to be done by this date because this is when I'm having guests arrive. How do you think that would work for the mind of an Italian?
Perfectly. It would work perfectly. I used this technique a couple of times, but now I'm not sure about the timing here. So if I, let's say I really have an event, okay? Or even if I don't, but let's say I do, okay? Mm-hmm. And the event is December 1st. I will tell them that I have this big event and everything needs to be perfect 2 weeks before that. I'm not telling them the real date. I don't know if what you would do in the States, but I wouldn't tell them the real date, especially if it's not a fake event, but a real event.
Right, right, right.
Then, of course, it depends on what you're doing. If it's just your garden, you know, then you can say 1 week before or 3 days before the mm-hmm. actual event. Or if it's finishing a whole house, and because you're like, yeah, my whole family is moving to Italy, and so they'll be here and I need bedrooms, then just say 2 months before that.
Okay.
At that point, they will feel bad for you and it will do everything to help you. Okay. And that's why the hardest part, especially for properties to restore, if you're not here, if you're not on the premises and checking on them. Because if you are in your home country, they will be like, oh yeah, that foreigner is like 6 hour flight from here. Who cares? Let's finish other projects first for people who really need them. But you do need, you need that too. You're just not here and they forget about you, or they're like, yeah, there's nothing they can do. So yeah, that would work, but just make sure the timing once again, say that 2 weeks or 2 months before the actual event.
Yeah, good to know. Yeah, and I think you're right. But I think that's true anywhere, right? Like if you're trying to renovate a property remotely, even if you're in the United States, wherever you are, you're gonna hit some serious hiccups and roadblocks, and people maybe not feeling that sense of urgency anywhere. But it seems like it would be even especially true in Italy.
Yeah, because we are special.
Exactly.
And then, you know, I try to tell you not to be too pushy, and because you don't want to have an enemy working for you, right? And the next topic will be making friends, because that's tough. That's really tough. And that's the only, I know that when you come here on holiday, you've visited, you've seen movies, you talk to people who came to Italy, and everyone is saying that Italians are super nice, super helpful, chatty, and they really are. I mean, we are, but that's just small talk, okay? That's just, and we're really good at it. Yeah, absolutely. We can spend like 8 hours at work, but 3 hours of just chatting with our colleagues and 5 hours maybe work. And that's why it takes so long to have things done, by the way. But, you know, we are really good at that, but it's not making friends. So the same Italian who spent hours literally oversharing, maybe you got into a shop to buy a pair of shoes and you get out of there and you know the names of all their children and grandchildren and where they spent the last holidays. And like, what just happened in there? I just asked for those shoes in my size and now I am a friend of them. So that's what happens. We overshare even sometimes, but that same person will not invite you over for dinner, will not ask you to meet again, to chat again. They're not trying to be friends, you know? It's just small talk. And that's something I personally think Italians like to have an audience. Mm-hmm. We're like actors. We move our hands. So just venting out, you know, if you really think about that every time that something like this happened, they were never asking you How's life back home? How's life where you live? Do you have a house like this? Do you eat that? No, it's all about them. And that doesn't happen only with you because you're a foreigner. Also with me, that I'm an Italian, they never ask me if I'm married or, you know, I have a cat or anything. They just talk about themselves and their families. Because we like to talk a lot. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. But not having a close real friendship, because remember, I already mentioned that we divide people into groups, people we know and people we don't know. And speaking to someone we don't know, it's easier. You can even overshare, you know, your personal problems, issues, and so on, because you don't know them and you never see them again. While the people we do know, the real friends, they're just a few. Mm-hmm. So once again, it won't be easy. Don't just, you know, think that since the last time you were here, the waitress was so chatty and nice and helpful, oh, it will be very easy to make friends. It will not be easy.
Mm-hmm. So prepare yourself for the fact that making friends in Italy is going to be a slow process. Not even just forget about the language barrier. I mean, that's the most essential thing. Let's say you're past the language barrier. Mm-hmm. And you're assuming maybe, oh, the reason I don't have friends in Italy is because I don't speak perfect Italian. But that when you get to the point where you can speak fluent Italian and you still are finding it challenging to create friends, you're saying don't take that personally. Understand that that's cultural.
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something you can do, especially when you move here. And it's just to put yourself out there. Just be the first one to talk and maybe tell them, oh, I'm new in town, especially if you're in a small village. But even if you move to a bigger city, just go to the nearby cafe or something and say, oh, I just moved here. You will be seeing a lot of me in the next months, years or so, because we also have a lot of tourists, you know. So to us, you all look the same. Oh, yeah, those Americans, Germans, Dutch, whatever, they're all tall and blonde or whatever. So they don't really pay attention and they don't think they will ever see you again. And maybe you go there after 1 week and then another couple of days and they don't even recognize it's the same person, because they don't. We don't pay much attention because there's a million of you coming here.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put yourself out there, you're the first one to say, even in English, it's fine because most people understand a little bit, or pointing with your hands, I live, vivo qui. Mm-hmm. And then they will start recognizing you and then saying a little hello. Still, not becoming real friends, but it's a little bit more, because I'm afraid most of you, especially if you're not, you know, students, very young, then you go to university, so that's a total different thing. But if you're an adult, then you will feel a little bit lonely. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying homesick, maybe, because Italy is beautiful, so you will love it here, but lonely, yeah.
Yeah, that's something I definitely have experienced, that sense of loneliness. I attribute it mainly to, I think I have so much faith in my abilities to connect with people, because I can do that really well in the United States or places that speak English. However, I think it's good to have that little dose of reality and that realistic expectation of what's going to be happening with your friendships. How do Italians feel about you learning their name and then calling them by their name?
That's a good question. Sorry, because he can also see my face and I'm like, what? Because now that I think about it, because you see cultural differences,
mm-hmm.
I don't know the names of all the people I talk to every day, like the butcher or so on. Some of them, of course, now, but I don't think I ever call them by their names, or I just figured them out later because someone was saying, oh, he's not here today, she's not here today. You know what I mean? We are not big fans of names. And that's because we have, and that was, by the way, my next topic. We all have a small town mentality, even in big cities, okay? The whole country. We're very provincial. That's how you say that. So small town. So what happens in a small town? Everybody knows everybody, right? And sometimes it's not even names. It's just nicknames, monikers. So yeah, you don't need to. It sounds a little bit artificial, probably. You can introduce yourselves like, oh, thank you for the cappuccino. I just moved here. My name's Nathan, and I'll be coming here to have cappuccino every day from now on because I loved it. Okay, so you can do that. It's probably better if you say Nathan, so it's easier, but you get the idea, right?
Right.
But I don't think we would say our names, no.
So I've found that the best way to shock an Italian is to ask them their name.
Yeah, you're right. I just realized that this very moment. You're right.
Because that's, I was raised, my mom raised us and told us, me and my brothers and sisters, the most beautiful thing, the most beautiful sound anyone can hear is the sound of their own name being spoken. And so to know someone's name, to remember it, and then to call them, buongiorno Giacomo, or buongiorno Maria, come stai? That might be considered by an Italian, whereas Americans would love that. Italians might consider that to be presumptuous.
No, no. Now, you know what? As soon as you said that, your mom was totally right. It is the best thing to hear. And now that you said buongiorno Giacomo, I loved it. You're right. We do like it too.
Okay.
But if, let's pretend I work in a shop, like, and you buy something from me and you ask me, what's your name? Come ti chiami? My first thought is, oh my God, what have I done? Is this going to complain with my boss, the police? What happened? We're suspicious, remember? Because you're right. A stranger and a foreigner, or mostly a stranger. So what you could do, and that really helps, and that's what happened here. You're right. Don't ask them for the names. So let's say you want to know the name of the man making you your cappuccino in the morning. You go and buy fruit at the market and ask, oh, wow, I had cappuccino there. What's the name of the nice guy owning the cafe? And then they tell you it's Salvatore. And so the next morning you go there and say, buongiorno, Salvatore. Your cappuccino was great. This is perfect. I'm going to use that too. Yeah, because okay. We don't like being asked for our names. It's like, what is this? Police. How do you say when you have your light in the face?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've got a spotlight on you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. So because I love to call people by their name. It's just the way I was raised, like I said, to do that. And so what happens is I oftentimes find myself doing what you just said, which was at the end of the interaction, I've just checked out, I've just paid, and I'm getting ready to walk out of the shop or wherever I am. And I say, come ti chiama? You know, they sort of look at you like, why are you asking me? You can almost hear them say, perché?
Yeah.
And you could almost see that getting ready to come out of their mouth. Like, why are you, what in the world? Why do you need to know this? Why is that? That's not essential information. And so then all I'm doing, once they tell me their name, you know, they say like, you know, whatever they say, Mario. And I say, grazie mille, Mario. Ciao. And they sort of look at me like, that's all you wanted? You wanted to be able to say thank you and use my name? They're sort of like, what just happened? It's like this total like shock moment where they're kind of like looking around like, what's, am I in a Twilight Zone? What's happening?
I'm literally crying because I'm laughing so hard because that's so true. Like someone asking, come ti chiami? It's like, why? Why me? What have I done? But the same person, as we were saying right a moment ago, maybe just talk to you for half an hour about personal health issues or troubles at home, you know, with the wife or the husband. And it's like, okay, now I know how many times a day you use the restroom, but I don't know your name. Yeah, that's how Italian work. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy if you think about it, but
yeah, I think it might be universal that people anywhere in the world love the fact that you care enough to remember their name and then call them by their name. There's I have a favorite shop that I've mentioned many times in episodes in Conegliano, and I've gotten to know Christina, Alessandro, and I think Anna. Anyway, there's like at least three or four different people in that shop. I've learned their names because I'm there so often. I find it very like awkward to not know someone's name after I've seen them 20 times. And so I do see their faces kind of light up because they also know that I'm a regular, and they, and so for me to be there and to remember their names, I think that they like it, but they also, the other side of that coin is that they have seen me so much. So I'm not a new face. I'm not somebody that's like just showing up out of the blue. So I don't know. You got to find the right appropriate moments, don't you?
Yes. Yes, you do. Totally. And io non so cosa succeda oggi, ma avevo un pensiero proprio su questo che hai appena detto tu. And just out of my mind, because that was very, very, oh yeah, yeah, sorry.
I'm okay.
So you see, I was mentioning the small town mentality. The other reason why it's weird if you ask for their names is because, especially if you've been there to that shop or whatever a couple of times already, they know your name. Small town mentality, all people around you, they know things about you you don't even know. Okay, people talk and someone will be like, oh yeah, that's the new American who moved in that apartment. Remember where my great aunt used to live? All these sorts of things. They will know the color of your house and how you painted the apartment because, you know, the people who restored your house already told them. And so they know who you are already. It's like the secret code. You don't need to ask. You don't need to talk, because once you're not a stranger anymore or just a tourist stopping by, you're part of the community. You are the outsider, but you're part of, they're keeping an eye on you. They're protecting their small village. So they know who you are already. Mm-hmm. And they think, because that's what small town mentality is all about, they think that since they know who you know who they are, right? And that happens to me a lot of times, maybe in town. I'm like, oh yeah, remember to tell that to my niece. And I'm like, I don't even know who you are. How am I supposed to know who your niece is? You know, these things happen. And I'm Italian, but I'm in a new town. Even if it's 15 years, I'm still the new, the one from Milan. Mm-hmm. So that's what happens. And this small town mentality also applies to the government, to big things. So that's another thing you should be prepared to, especially if you're trying to fill in forms online, because something like this will happen. Name, last name, great. Born in, and maybe you write Brazil, United States, Canada. And then you have to flag your citizenship. That's a hard word to pronounce. La tua cittadinanza. Citizenship. Mm-hmm. And if you fill in born in the USA, they don't allow you to put Italian citizenship because you're born in the USA. You cannot be Italian. Of course you can. There are thousands of reasons why I might be an Italian citizen born and raised in Brazil or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because small town mentality, they don't think that something different could go on. Mm-hmm. And that's not just only for you once again. I am a little bit different out of the box. And I moved a lot, especially when I was younger. So I got my driver's license at 18. And by the time I moved here, so in 10 years, even less, I think I moved 8 times. Mm-hmm. So every single time I have to tell the police my new address, and the police sent me by mail a sticker to put on my driver's license. And there's one page just for your addresses. It was the old paper, you know, driver's license. And there were three slots for that. And a driver's license lasts your whole life. If you don't lose it, if you don't, you know, your whole life, three slots for the address. So by the time I got all around them, and then, and I was like, I have no more space. Where should I put this? And I went to the police, local police office, and asked them. And they were like, what's going on here? You're not supposed to have that many. And I'm like, but I moved. Yeah, but this is too much. You can't cover the old ones. You can't use another page. You can't. Why do you have so many stickers? That's, how is that even possible? And I'm like, well, it is possible. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's something different. I was not born and raised and stayed in the same town my whole life. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when you move to a new address, mm-hmm. especially a new city, but also a new address in within the same city, local police will come and check that you really live there. Because if you have your home address there, you pay less for your utilities and so on. So they have to double check. That's okay. Mm-hmm. But local police only comes during work hours. Mm-hmm. And I'm not home. I'm working. So I'm like, yeah, they came here and they leave a note. And I'm like, if we don't find you the next time, then we will just cancel your address. Like, you don't live here. And I'm like, yeah, but if you come from 9 to 1, I'm at work. And they don't tell you when they're coming, of course, too easy. And that's what they literally told me, not even kidding here. Well, you can have someone else in there just showing the house and maybe, you know, your clothes, so we know that you live there. And I was like, someone else, like who? Your parents. And I'm like, my parents are not here. A sister, a cousin. And I'm like, they all live literally 5 hours drive from here. And they work too, by the way. All of them? How is that even possible? You're lying. What are you hiding? You see?
Interesting. So there's no room. There's just not an open mindset to the fact that somebody might be living life a little differently than everybody else. Mm-hmm. Somebody might be living a long ways away from everybody in their family. They might have moved multiple times. They might have been just doing life a little differently.
Exactly. And you coming from abroad, you will have a totally different background, totally mm-hmm. different ideas. So just be prepared that people will be like, oh, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you cannot be born in one country and then living in another one. That's not possible. And you're like, yes, it is possible. Hello, mm-hmm. I'm the proof of it. So just be prepared. It will be like, you know, being out of a Kafka book, but that's mm-hmm. that's how it goes. People telling you that your life is not possible. It can't be.
Yeah, I've experienced a little bit of that. And you're right about the small town mentality. The city that we live in up in Northern Italy at the moment, it's not a big town, but it's not the tiniest village. It's quite a robust and lively city with a lot going on. But when you go to some of the local, to the local comune, and you are trying to do something or make a request or make a change or update your personal information. Yeah. Like you mentioned about, you know, going to a police station or whatever, trying to get your ID and all of the stuff. And if anything about your situation is unique, like for example, Alessandro and my situation is a little unique for Italians. Mm-hmm. Anything like that, you get this sort of deer in the headlights look on the faces of these workers. They're just like, look at you, like they know in their mind, you can see that in their mind that they know that there's not a form for this. There's the forms they have will not work in this situation. So all of a sudden their brain starts to go crunch, like, wait a minute. So here's someone standing in front of me that's telling me this is their situation. We don't have any way to accommodate or to understand or to declare this. So what do we ask for? So then there becomes this little miniature conference in the office until somebody with enough power, enough clout or enough authority in that office comes into the scene and says, No, it's fine. Just make a little note. Just make a little note on the side, or just they don't need that after all. If that's just, you know, it's just, it's interesting, isn't it?
It is. And there's always a solution.
Of course.
Yourself. There is. It would just take some time as usual. So that's how a 10 minutes meeting turns into a 5 hours meeting.
Right.
And then, yeah, you'll find the solution, but be prepared. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
And speaking of small town mentality, the last thing I want to talk about, the not so bright side of it all, is that we speak Italian. And you'll be like, yes, of course. We know that we are in Italy. I know you were expecting this when moving to Italy. But the problem is that we have literally thousands, I should look into it, but thousands of foreigners buying a second home here in Italy, like their holiday home, their property. And they don't mean to move here. They just have the second house. And there is no way to find a, you know, electricity company or things like that, that are not things just for tourists, you know, but things for people that live here with at least the basic information in English. I mean, we are in Italy, so it's obvious that when you sign a contract for your utilities and things like that, the contract must be in Italian because that's our official language and so on. But still, maybe having a translation for at least in English, which is sort of the international language today, at least one translation in English of the contract, then I will sign an Italian one, or the you know, the main information that I need to have water, electricity, and maybe apply for a parking permit if it's a historical center, things like that. They're only in Italian, but there are a lot, really a lot of foreigners moving here. And, you know, we have different kind of people moving here, like immigrants. And I can totally understand that they speak the most, you know, strange languages, different languages, and maybe they don't speak English. So people are like, okay, just learn Italian, you know? But the so-called expats, people just buying properties here and bringing money into Italy, let's be honest, because they come here, buy properties, restore them, and then live here part of, you know, their lives or holidays, and not helping them. It's just business, you know. If I opened an electricity company in Italy, I would be like, all our contracts are translated in three languages. So just sign. Don't be worried. That's what you're signing in Italian. But nobody does that because people are like, why do foreigners need an electricity or a phone bill? Because they bought a house here, because they're moving here. You see?
Yeah.
You find hotels, restaurants, museums in English and many other languages, but not this sort of things.
Mm.
But when you move to Italy, those are the things you need.
Those are some excellent tips, and really, really appreciate your feedback, your wisdom, and sharing what we should expect when we move to Italy.
Yeah, because my goal is for you not to have a meltdown when you're here, because living here, it's beautiful. It will be amazing. Mm-hmm. But just be prepared. Next time we will talk about the bright side of moving to Italy.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you again so much, Vera. You have enlightened us, made us a little bit more knowledgeable, a little bit more aware of what to expect, as always. And your expertise on all things Italian from the perspective of being a real Italian, as you are, is much appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here week after week, and I can't wait to be back next week.
Yep. I'm looking forward to it.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao, ciao. Well, that was another wonderful segment of La Vera Italia. Thank you again, Vera, for sharing your time with us each week. We certainly look forward to our time with you and for all of the fantastic knowledge you share with us from the perspective of a real Italian, which is absolutely invaluable. Well, that brings us to our surrounding sounds for this week's episode. And today I have a really, really interesting sound to share with you. As you know, this summer, we spent quite a bit of time down in southern Italy looking at properties, searching for that perfect place, that piece of land that we could renovate a ruin on, or, you know, have enough land to have a little bit of a farm so where I can start growing all of the wonderful plants and trees and orchards and grapes and maybe have some chickens and a little farm. And so we spent a lot of time in southern Italy. And as we were searching in the hills above the Amalfi Coast, we found ourselves alone without any real estate agent helping us because it was August. And so nobody was interested in showing us property. The owners weren't interested in showing us. The real estate agents weren't showing us. Everybody was on vacation. They were very much in August vacation mode. And that's very understandable, something you should absolutely expect. So Alessandro and I, several times, found ourselves totally alone, lost, and sort of meandering through the hills above the Amalfi Coast, because that's where we were really focusing our search. And this particular surrounding sound includes the sound of waking up one morning. You're going to hear all the chickens. It's like a chorus of roosters and chickens. You can hear them sort of waking up with the dawn. The sun hasn't even come up, but the sky is that wonderful gray color, that bluish gray that you get in the early, early morning before the sunrise. And you get to hear a little bit of the bells. And then you hear us sort of traipsing around the hills. Now, the video that goes along, the Instagram video that goes along with this, you'll be able to see where we were and what we were looking at. But we just were trying to find some of these pieces of property with these old stone houses that were sort of ruined and abandoned. And one of the ones that we found, it seemed like somebody was maybe living there, but I think they were sort of living off the grid. I mean, like really living off the grid. And then we stumbled across some goats and some sheep that clearly belonged to the owners who lived there. The property was supposedly uninhabited, but somebody is clearly on this property we were visiting and what I'm sharing you sounds from today. Someone was living there, taking care of these animals, growing grapes, growing crops and vegetables. There was a garden there. And so I felt like we never saw anybody, but I felt like maybe somebody saw us and was watching us as we were traipsing around. And so anyway, Alessandro was very uncomfortable and I kept trying to get him to come with me and come on, let's just walk a little further. And he's, of course, you know, very polite and doesn't want to be in anyone's space. I didn't want to be invading anyone's space either, but I didn't know someone lived there until we got so deep into this property and started seeing signs of life everywhere. So you're going to hear some sounds of the sheep and the goats and just us sort of traipsing around trying to find our way through these little very, very steep roads. You can maybe even hear my breath. I'm sort of like gasping for breath as we're just climbing these very, very steep hills and these winding paths that are sort of unpaved paths through the hills that are very, very steep. So enjoy those sounds, and I will be back afterwards to say goodbye.
There's a goat? Okay. But where's the house? Huh? Let's go. This is it. Come on, come with me. Come with me. Great, but I need someone who speaks Italian with me. Come with me. We can find it. Did you go here? Did you go here? Come. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed those sounds from this week's episode. I hope that you sort of could imagine where we were, and don't forget to check out the Instagram video so you can really see how truly beautiful it was and how remote it was where we were. You couldn't even drive a car down some of these little dirt roads, or I should say up or down these dirt roads, because they were truly like up the side of a hill or a mountain. Anyway, what an adventure that was, and we didn't find our fabulous forever place there, but it was an adventure and we certainly got some good laughs out of it. Well, my friend, thank you again for coming back and sharing this time with me. I look forward to being here with you each week, and I am so grateful that I get to share this journey with you. Thank you for your wonderful reviews and leaving your 5 stars on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts. It means everything to me. It makes such a difference and helps our show to grow. So thank you for your wonderful 5-star reviews. Wherever you are listening to the sound of my voice today, I hope you are healthy and well, and I look forward to being back here with you next week for another episode. So until then, take care. God bless. Ciao, ciao, ciao.